And it drove me crazy reading through it and trying to figure out exactly what it was that David was trying to say here. I don't think I did it justice then. I don't know if I'll do it justice now. But I had had a chance to do a little bit more study on it. Psalm chapter 1. How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. And he will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. And in whatever he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but they are like chaff, which the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. If someone were to ask you tonight, what is your goal in life? What would your answer be? Your ultimate goal in life. Some of us have a little bit more life left than others, but what is your goal? Maybe what was your goal? Is it to have a better job? Have a little bit more money? Maybe a different car? A bigger and better house? More expensive clothes? All those kinds of things that people seem to think will make you happy, right? But what do all those things boil down to? What are we trying to accomplish with those things? What do we think that more money is going to get us more, a better job? What's that going to get us? All we want to do is be happy, right? We want to be happy. Happiness, though, it can be a very fake thing. We've talked about this in Sunday school class. Happiness can be such a fake thing. We can have all these things, and we can put a smile on our face and go to church, can't we? And look like the happiest people in the world. And nobody would ever know the difference, would they? They'd never know what's truly behind that smile, all the hurt, all the heartache, and all the sorrow. Happiness doesn't come in all these things, does it? It doesn't come with a better job. Seems like more stress, more pressure comes with a better job, right? It doesn't come in more money, because then you have to figure out how to manage it. It doesn't come with a better car, because cars break down. It doesn't come with a better house, because that house will eventually have to be repaired. And it doesn't come with more expensive clothes, because you'll inevitably outgrow those, won't you? Happiness can't be found in things. Have you ever noticed this? That some of the happiest people in the world are those who aren't looking for it. Did you catch that? Some of the happiest people in the world are the people who aren't even looking to be happy in the first place. Lots of people, it seems like, are looking, don't they? All the commercials that we see on TV is, hey, you got to have this, you got to have that. You know, the latest cleaning product, the latest whatever, you've got to have it because it's going to make your life so much better, so much easier. And we're trying to find it, but real happiness, true happiness, I believe is more of a byproduct than a goal. You know, we want to be happy, and that's what we're striving for, but happiness really is that byproduct. Psalm chapter 1 gives us a very real insight, I believe, into what can make us truly happy. And that is our relationship with God. When you're in grade school, you learn how to write papers that compare and contrast. And I think this psalm is a very, very good example of that. Comparing and contrasting. It's a very fitting way to begin this book. It lets us know that you can live life in one of two ways, with or without God. And in my studies, I find that it's sometimes helpful to read from a few different versions of something to maybe help gain a little bit of understanding. I'd like to read one other version that I found of Psalm chapter 1 for you here real quickly. It says, happy are those who reject the advice of evil people, who do not follow the example of sinners or join those who have no use for God. Instead, they find joy in obeying the law of the Lord, and they study it day and night. They are like those trees that grow beside a stream, that bear fruit at the right time, and whose leaves do not dry up. They succeed in everything they do. But evil people are not like this at all. They're like straw that the wind blows away. Sinners will be condemned by God and kept apart from God's own people. The righteous are guided and protected by the Lord, but the evil are on their way to doom. So let's think about this for a few minutes. Living our lives one of two ways, with or without God. First, I'd like to look at the life without God. What would a life without God look like? In your mind, I want you to picture it. What would your life look like if God was not there? If God was not present, where would you be today? Would you be in this building? I can't honestly say that I'd be here. I think a life without God might look something like this. Number one, we would be taking the advice of evil people. How many of us have ever been guilty of this? When we have a problem in our lives, the first person you run to is a friend. And you say, man, what do I do with this? You know, I'm having problems at school, I'm having problems at home, what do I need to do? I've been guilty of that. I run to my friends, especially in high school. You know, you run to your friends, because in high school most of your friends aren't in church, and you ask those people, what should I do? And they have advice for you, don't they? Number two, I think they would follow the examples of sinners. It seems like all the people we see involved in sin every day have it made, don't they? When you're out in the world and you see all those people that you know they're not right with God, you know they're not living their lives the way that they should, but yet they have everything. They have it all. They have everything that you want. They have that good job. They have more money, a better car, a bigger house. And you want to be like those people, don't you? At least I know I find myself leaning more towards that sometimes. Number three, this also comes from verse 1. I believe that they would join those who have no use for God. Can you imagine anything worse than having no use for the God who created you? Anything worse than living your life not recognizing the fact that there is a God and that He created this universe? It's also interesting to note here that these things seem to get a little bit progressively worse, don't they? It starts out with just asking their advice and then following in their footsteps, and then pretty soon you're one of them. You're one of those people who have no use for God. But isn't that how it is with so many things in our lives? You know, you want to cheat on that test at school, right? You guys have never done that, right? You want to cheat on that test. It's just that one question, no big deal. But then later you find that you're just copying the whole test off your neighbor. I've been there, done that. It's not a good thing. Or maybe it's drugs. You know, you start out with just a little bit. It's not going to hurt me. But then pretty soon, there's no turning back. That's all it takes. It's just that little hook, that little, well, okay, I can do this to get started. And before long, in verse 4, we're like that straw that the wind blows away. Verse 5, we're condemned by God. And in verse 6, we're on our way to doom. I don't know about you, but I don't like that picture at all. I don't like the thought of my life without God. I find myself more and more these days being grateful for that one little word, that little three-letter word in there. That word, not. Blessed is the man who does not walk in those ways. So in contrast to a life without God, what would a life with God look like? If you were to say, I live my life for God, what would your life look like today? Perhaps it would look something like this. From verse 1. Number 1, they would not take the advice of evil people. Perhaps instead they would ask God what they should do. They would take that time to bow their knees before the Lord Almighty and say, God, I put it in your hands. What do you want me to do? Like David learned to do. You know, it took David a little while. He went down, 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 down. And he hits rock bottom, and finally he turns to God. He says, God, I've tried it all by myself. Now I'm leaving it up to you. Help me. Number 2, they would not follow the examples of sinners. I think they would try to follow the example of Jesus. If you remember Paul, Paul was a sinner, wasn't he? He even called himself the chief of sinners, but once he realized what his life was like without God while he was trying to fight against God, and he turned it around, how great his life was, all the great things that he was able to do for the Lord's church. If we were living our life with God, I believe we would consult God with our problems. I believe we would be trying to follow the example of Jesus. Number three, people living their lives with God, they would not join those who have no use for God. But why wouldn't they do that? Why wouldn't they do this? Because they wouldn't let themselves get in that deep. They wouldn't let it go that far. When I think about this, I think about Peter. And I think about all the times that he denied the Lord. And we were even talking about him some this morning. All the things that he did, but he didn't let himself go, did he? He did a little bit better than Judas did. He didn't give in. He didn't let himself get that deep. To truly be God's people, we must fully rely on Him. And that's a risk in today's world, isn't it? Because when we look at what it takes to be successful in this world, it's definitely not what it takes to be successful in God's eyes, is it? And that's hard sometimes for the way that people look at you, because they know that you rely on God, that God is first in your life. That's hard for some people to deal with. I think there's a lot of comfort here, though, in these verses. At the end of verse 3, that little phrase, it's actually a full sentence, says that they will succeed or prosper in all that they do. Verse 6, we will be guided and protected by the Lord because He knows our path. What a great thought, what a comforting thought that is, especially to me. I think there's one thing in this verse, or in these verses, that's the key to it all. And that's in verse 3, that tree. We must try every day to live like that tree that David talks about in verse 3. I know that sounds weird, guys. You can laugh at me if you want. Trees, however, aren't easy to grow, are they? They're one of the hardest things I think that my dad has ever tried to grow. It takes time, and it takes patience. In my grandparents' yard, there was this huge pine tree. It was probably as tall as the ceiling. I've never seen a tree that tall before. And it was one that my dad had planted when he was a little boy. And by the time I was a little boy, it had gotten so big. And it would drop its pine cones all over the yard and drive my grandpa crazy. But my dad would, he'd find little trees, maybe about like that, that had popped up in the flower bed or something. And he'd dig them up and put them in a coffee can, and we'd put them in the back of the van, and they'd spill on the way home, and we'd finally get them home, and he'd take them out into the pasture, out into one of the valleys where we had a bunch of trees, and he'd plant that tree there. And you know, periodically, you know, once or twice a week, he'd go back and he'd check on that tree to make sure it was still alive. But there's one thing that hinders the growth of little pine trees, and that's cows. You know, because my dad had an electric fence around this area, but cows don't seem to respect those sometimes. And they'd get in there, and it seemed like they always found those little baby trees. I don't know why. They just had a nose for them. But they'd bite them off. They wouldn't even chew them up. They'd just bite them off and spit them out. And it drove my dad crazy, but he kept doing it. I don't know why. It's hard to grow these trees. And finally, when I was in sixth grade, one of my teachers was giving away trees, and they were a little bit bigger than the ones that my dad was trying to start. So we got these trees, and we put them in the yard this time, because, you know, the cows don't get in the yard, right? Cows don't get in the yard. Trees can grow there. In the yard, it's more like the lawnmower that gets in the way. But here, too, sometimes my dad would leave the gate open, and the cows would get in the yard, and they'd go to this tree, and they'd bite it off and spit it right back out. Trees are hard to grow. I mean, they're hard enough when you don't have cows chewing them up and spitting them out. But there's a reason that trees are so strong, isn't there? It's not the fact that they're tall. It's what's underneath. It's that root system. That they grow deep into the ground and that they grow long. There's a reason we talked about in Bible class just last week. that it takes 2 days to grow a mushroom and 60 years to grow an oak tree. We can't hope to be strong as soon as we're planted, especially as Christians. As soon as we're baptized, you know, we come up out of the water and we're like, Jesus, and we're on fire, and then the world gets to us and we kind of maybe feel like that tree that's gotten bitten off and spit out. It takes time to grow. It takes time to become the mature Christian that you want to be. You can't be it right now. It doesn't work that way. And even with that, if you don't take great care, if you don't water that tree, if you don't look after that tree, it won't survive. The same is true with you and I today. If we don't look after our Christianity, we must delight in the law of the Lord. We must study it day and night. We can't just let it sit on the table, you know, because it's easy. It's easy to let that Bible collect dust, isn't it? To leave it sitting on your nightstand, you know, it's there. But I'm so tired tonight, and just roll over and go to bed. We must study it day and night, because that's the only way that we're going to be truly strong and truly happy. It's the only way that we as Christians are going to be able to put down roots, that we're going to be able to put those roots down in the ground. Jeremiah chapter 17, if you'd like to turn there real quickly with me. Verses 7 and 8, it says, "But I will bless the person who puts his trust in me. He is like a tree growing near a stream and sending roots out to the water. It is not afraid when hot weather comes, because its leaves stay green. It has no worries. There is no rain." When there is no rain, rather. "And it keeps on bearing fruit." His word is what gets us through. God and Jesus is what gets us through those tough times. When it gets hot, when the pressures of life get to you, when there's drought, when you feel like you're not the Christian that you should be, when there's storms, when bad things happen in your lives, He is what gets us through. So what about you tonight? Maybe you've been trying to live a life with God, and you just haven't managed to get your roots planted firmly in the ground yet. Maybe you've been trying to live your life without God. Let me tell you, it's not as great as it seems. It's not as great as it seems to be without God. Happy are those whose delight is in the law of the Lord and study it day and night. Happy are those who choose to live their life with the Lord. If there's anything that we can do for you tonight, whether it be to pray for you, whether you need to be baptized, please come as we stand and sing.